Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Pack Leader Podcast, season number 2, episode number 8. How we doing, Bland?
Doing well, Coach. Start things off with the pin pool. And I say start things off, but that is the end of the pin pool. Officially, yeah. We finished with 68 pins. The last count was done just following the NCAA tournament. And to my knowledge, we have not had any other competitions since then. So
that is
unless
accurate.
You count all the freestyle throws that we've been doing in practice. Because right. There have been some pins and some frequent flyer miles doled out.
For a that. Lot of those given out.
But with the NCAA tournament wrapped up our season, we got our final two pins there. First one came in the first match of the tournament.
Yeah.
Match number one wrestled Brady Carter from East Stroudsburg and pinned him late. And then later that day, Josh Blatt picked up a fall over De Blasi from Colorado Mines.
Yeah.
And actually, that kid had beaten Blatt at Midwest. So yeah. Not only did he go out there and win decisively, but he stuck him and it wasn't like he caught him. So yeah. It was really good to see him kind of make that step forward.
Absolutely. And we definitely will get into that match for the NCAA recap. But that was a fun match to watch for sure. With those two pins, that brought our final count to 68 pins. We're excited because last year we finished with 62. So coming in with 6 more pins on the season. Chris Walton finishes the year with the most pins on the team. He has 7. Dameless holds down the 10-second mark. He pinned his opponent at the Newberry Open in 10 seconds. So he holds the record for fastest pin. And at this point, every pin pool member who has made a pledge, you should have heard from me individually. We sent out 145 different personalized emails to all you guys on instructions on how to fulfill the pledge. Please check your spam folders in case you didn't get it, or if for some reason you just don't see it in your email, feel free to reach out and let us know if you want me to resend those instructions. But everyone should have that email with the pin pool data attached so that you can see how many pins we have, who got the pin, and at what time against what opponent. And it'll also have a link in there highlighted for you to just go. It takes you to our Give Now page, and you're able to put in your information to make your gift. If you do make your gift, Coach brought up this point. I know we were kind of looking at the website, and some people are giving and doing it anonymously. Please make sure you shoot us a text or email so we know as we're getting out pin pool decals and gifts. We don't want to not send it to you, and you gave anonymously.
Right. Also, on the same note, maybe you don't even want the gift or whatever. That's fine as well. But it also keeps us from blowing you up, saying, hey, you need to go fulfill your pledge. And you're like, hey, jerk, I already have. It was anonymous. So, again, if you don't want everybody seeing that online, at least let one of us know so that we can kind of cross out the list and make sure that we don't continue hounding you in that regard. And also, if possible, and you may not know how you were listed on the sheet, the pledge sheet originally, try to use the same name just because it makes it a little easier to check things off. Yeah. I know I'm kind of nitpicking, and I shouldn't because you guys are giving to us, and we appreciate the heck out of it. But it does, again, kind of help us keep things straight and keep you from getting duplicate emails or not getting an email or not getting credit for something that you did or whatever. But it just kind of helps us keep tabs on things.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you to everyone who made the pin pool another success. This was our 4th year doing it, and it again has really done you guys have made it a huge success in terms of supplementing our annual operating budget. And I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do with the funds yet. I was riding in the car this morning with my mother-in-law, and she's a avid supporter of Newberry Wrestling, and she pledges every single year, and that was a question she asked. She's like, so what are y'all going to do? And I was like, you know, we're working on some things, nothing concrete yet, but definitely going to be looking to continue using that support from y'all to enhance the student athlete experience, whether that's facility, maintenance, equipment, uniforms, whatever that might be. But we'll get it out to you and make sure you know. I want to give a special thank you to the 2 national champion level pin pool members who came to our annual awards banquet yesterday. We had our end of the season awards banquet at Still Horse Smokehouse. It was delicious. Thank you, Frank, for hooking us up there.
Always good.
Yes, always good. And we had 2 national champion pin pool level members, Paul Watson, who's the head wrestling coach at Blythewood High School, and also Fernando Dominguez, his wife Peggy, and their son Trenton also came. And we were able to honor and recognize them too, because that's part of those rewards for those national champion level members, is they can come out and enjoy that meal and be recognized for that huge, generous gift that they make us at the end of the year. So thank y'all for coming.
Yes, and just to clarify, Fernando's son Fernando is on our team. Trenton gets mentioned separately because he wrestles across town at PC.
Yeah.
We'll let that be what it is. But so it was our wrestler Fernando's family, Fernando, Peggy, and Trenton, who were there as national championship level members, but I didn't want Fernando Jr. to feel left out.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll try to – I think some of the feedback I got was just the invitations came out a little too late this year to get more national champion pinpool members. So we'll definitely do a better job next year of getting that info out, the who, what, when, where. That way, if you do want to make that trip, you can, and you'll be able to know how to do that in a timely manner. Since we're talking about –
probably be – roundabout the first Sunday in April, if it's not Easter, at Steel Horse Smokehouse.
Yeah, we can go ahead and say that. So, but yeah, no, we'll do make sure we do a better job of getting that information out. And while we're talking about the banquet, huge, huge shout out and thank you to Rita Decatur and Carolyn. They hooked it up, did they not?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was awesome. When I walked in there to drop off the easels, mm-hmm. I thought what I was dropping off was going to be like the extent of the decorations,
yeah.
I think, because Miss Reed did those nice things for the guys on senior night, mm-hmm. So I thought it was gonna be something similar to that, and I was like, okay, I'm bringing these things, and you're just gonna walk past some pictures and then sit down in the restaurant and eat. Nah, they went all out. It was yeah. Awesome.
There were what do you call things you put over the tables? Tablecloths, you know. They were candles,
yeah, with floating candles and beads in the water that were school colors. There were balloons everywhere. There were those
things hanging from the lights.
Like the Chinese lantern things are like paper circle things,
yeah,
that are like three colors. Yeah, awesome.
Gifts for all the seniors, gifts for the national qualifiers, gift for coaches, trainers. She killed it. So thank you both of y'all for doing that. I told the guys next year, you know, it probably won't look like that with Timmy and Christian leaving.
Go ahead and lower those expectations.
Right.
Whatever you thought you were going to walk into today, think that for next year. Don't go with what you did walk into.
But she did mention in passing that if we needed help, we could call her. So
she's gonna get.
She'll probably be getting a phone call.
Rita, don't change your phone number.
Right, be looking out for a call. Keep that first April, that first weekend in April. But yeah, moving on. Last thing I got before we jump into the competition recap is just a reminder that our 2023 summer wrestling camps are open for registration, June 17th through the 23rd. We're really pumped to announce our most recent partnership with Vantage Wrestling. It's an apparel company out of Ohio, and we're working with them. They are helping us with branding, marketing, advertising, and they've also been named as the title sponsor for our Newberry Summer Duels. And with that comes the winning team. They receive a reward of a full team singlet, a set of custom singlets, and it's actually going to be 20 singlets in that set.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, if you got a tweener or if you need extra mediums or extra larges or something like that, you can take that voucher, and it's used to redeem those singlets from them.
Right, and for those of you familiar with our camps in the past, Vantage has always done our fight shorts,
mm-hmm.
and those are always a huge hit. We always sell out. They're gone like hotcakes. Very popular here. And in the past, we've done a set of team shorts for the winning team, and we buy them ahead of time. The sizing's usually kind of screwy. They're pre-designed. They're usually Newberry-themed. So the cool thing about this voucher that Coach is talking about is it's going to actually allow you to basically – plug in a reward code on Vantage's website or however they, you know, set it up, but you're going to be able to basically just order a set from Vantage with your team name, your school. It doesn't necessarily have to say anything about us or camp.
Right.
You know, it's just going to be basically a free set of singlets for coming and competing well, winning our camp. And, you know, you place the order like you're paying for it, and then you use that voucher to cover the cost. So yeah, it'll be awesome for whoever wins.
Absolutely. And top three teams at those duels will receive trophies as well. So definitely pumped and looking forward to another great summer. Last year, our team saw up to 12 and 13 duel matches. So it was a lot of wrestling, and it was a great time. I know we mentioned on the last episode that South Effingham had a great season. They won our duels, and then they went on to win a team state championship in Georgia, and they'll be back. So that's helping make it competitive, and we've gotten a couple of confirmations from other teams coming that's going to keep elevating the competition as well.
Yeah, I think the team that had a real tight duel with in the finals is also confirmed to come back. Absolutely. So we might see a repeat if we don't get any other top teams stepping up, but yeah. Either way, it'll be some good competition.
Definitely. Well, let's jump into this recap, Coach. 2023 NCAA championships are done. We took out six national qualifiers from the Super Region Championship that qualified. And, you know, I just want to address the elephant in the room. You know, I think it's safe to say it was definitely a down year for us. I think that comes with there being some changing of the guards in terms of the new faces of our program that are emerging. You know, the Isaiah Royals and the Caleb Spears are gone. You know, the Pattons, the Palmers, all of those those guys have transitioned out, and I think it was a year for other guys who are now stepping up to be the new leaders of our program, to get out there, get their feet wet. And so I think that's just kind of where we were. But all of those qualifiers have the opportunity to come back. I know five are coming for certain. We're working on another one. I won't say his name, but he knows who he is. But either way, five or six, you got to know that that gives us a huge foundation to build on in terms of being successful next season.
Oh, for sure. And I think one thing, you know, I don't want to keep harping on some of the things that we've talked about all year because every team deals with some of these issues, but we weren't necessarily in the same place going into the season that we found ourselves, you know, partway through the season or you know, toward the end of the season. You know, Zabrandon Gant, All-American, three-time region champ, three-time qualifier. He's one of those guys who this could have been his turn to carry the torch.
Mm-hmm.
Dislocated his shoulder in the semifinals at regionals, so he doesn't kind of get those accolades and get to put the bow on his season. Tim Decatur,
yeah,
breaks season his foot injury. And has a Liz Frank injury. It's like the smallest, most ridiculous little ligament in your foot. This is the most important ligament in your foot. And he broke it in a match in just a very regular position, and it was
while he was tech falling the kid.
Yeah, beating the heck out of the kid. Just a very freak accident. Under no fault of him, but you know he's kind of the same boat. You know, it was his turn to kind of carry the torch. You know, so we're in that weird transition, but it's something that was a little harder to see coming, just because we kind of had those next up and
lined up already.
Yeah, and yeah. By the end of the year, we're like, no, we were shoving some of the other guys up to kind of carry the torch for us. And,
yeah.
You know, it was a down year, but if you think about it, last year I don't think we considered it a down year. Mm-mm. And this year we qualified one extra guy.
Yeah.
We had one less region champ, but more region finalists. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of positives on this year. And, you know, lots of guys stepping up, like Devin Moore, who fell short of qualifying last year, winning the thing this year.
And getting on the podium.
The region tournament, getting on the podium, being an All-American. You know, Devin Rice, who came up short last year, qualifying. Some transfers coming in. Josh Black getting back there after qualifying as a freshman. You know, just lots of positives for a down year, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
If this is a down year, it could be much worse.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, there were plenty of teams that had much worse. So, but for the standard that we've set for ourselves and what we normally do on a traditional year, you know, definitely a little bit under the mark of what we aim to do, because eventually we want to bring a national championship to Newberry College, and I want to be very clear about that. And I know we got our work cut out for us, but like Coach said, on a down year, so many positives to build on. And it's nice to know that we get five of those pieces back next season for certain. And as long as we do a good job here in the spring, rounding out that recruiting class of 2023, I think that definitely puts us in a great spot to continue to compete with some of those top teams. Top teams being, I kind of just wanted to give everybody who didn't follow as closely the top four teams at the 2023 championships. So UCO won, and they kind of ran away with it. They were so tough this year.
Yeah. They qualified all 10.
Yeah.
I think they had 9 All-Americans.
Yeah.
It was
something is ridiculous. They won with 121 points. The next closest team was Lander, who took second with 78 points. Also qualified 9. I think their 74-pounder was the only one that didn't get out. They scored with 78 points. St. Cloud, third, with 64.5. And then Western Colorado, who's always tough, 61 points.
I think they had a really good tournament.
They did.
They're always tough, but – and they have years that they really do flirt with those top two or three spots, but mm-hmm. – But, man, this year they just had some kids that I really hadn't seen or heard and just wrestled their behinds off. They peaked at the right time. That was a team who really showed out. But, you know, Lander being in our region and finishing number two, that's one of those that, you know, it's kind of nice for somebody else to wear the target on their back for a year. But at the same time, you know, that's one of those things you want also.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, having that right here in our backyard to sort of keep us motivated is – probably a good thing,
mm-hmm.
but you know, RC's done a great job over there and he's put together a solid program and he brings most of his pieces back as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know they don't lose very many people. So that we definitely have our work cut out for us, but I mean, I love a challenge, man. And just talking about some of those pieces we got coming back, like we mentioned, six guys qualifying, three of them went out there and didn't have strong showings, went 0-2, but they still wrestled really competitive matches. You know, I think about 174 Dayton Fields losing that really tough first match. Was in an overtime against
it
that
was
kid?
In overtime, and it was on some crazy back points where he was hitting a switch and the guy hipped into him just enough to get a two count.
Yeah.
then Dayton still got the reversal, but, you know, just some little freaky things like that actually cost him in both matches. That one, he lost in overtime. In the next one, he was winning, but another funky scramble caused him to lose that one as well. So you hated to see his tournament end the way it did, especially as well as he wrestled those two guys.
Yeah, and as well as he had been wrestling throughout the course of the season. And I think it's just a matter, like you said, being able to put it together at the right time, because I do think he's better than both of those guys. But at the end of the day, you got to be able to execute, you know. Absolutely. And so I think that's something that he'll learn, and experience is the best teacher, man. You know, I mean, I think he'll take that experience back at the tournament next year and look out for him to be on the podium. I think also PJ had a strong showing, and I think also D. Rice as well. We got things we need to tune up and clean up. But like I said, they're in a good place to continue building from where we left off, and they've already started that work shortly after we got back home from Nationals. So Zach Shoup had a great day. I mean, he was a blood rounder. He made it to, like you said, he pinned Brady Carter from East Stroudsburg at the 638 mark, and then went on to lose a tough one to one of those Western Colorado kids you mentioned, Patrick Allis, who went on to take third.
Right, and he was one of the ones who really just stepped up and kind of separated himself from the rest of the field. He wrestled Shoup in a tight match. I mean, Shoup wrestled him really tough, and then he went on to beat Joplin from Lander, who's very – we know how good he is. So he had a great day. But, yeah, Shoup wrestled him tough, and he got in that couple funky scrambles with his second match. But, yeah, I mean, just the way he wrestled Allis in the blood round match, kept it close, gave himself several opportunities to score, and Allis is just so long. That length finally caught up to him. It's hard to defend – that much length for 7 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just to get past the arms and to finish when you get to the legs. Yeah. No, that was definitely a style and leverage kind of matchup that didn't work out in our favor. But that kid's tough. Like you said, to go out and major Joplin says a lot about your skill level. So it wasn't like he lost to a scrub.
Absolutely.
At 141 pounds, another blood rounder, Josh Blatt, was super excited to see him get out there, because he has been one of the ones for us trending upward all season long. He unfortunately drew Zach Donathan, who, in my opinion, should be the wrestler of the year for Division II. That dude was crazy. I think he pinned his way to the finals.
Going into the finals, before the finals match, he hadn't wrestled a total of one period.
That's crazy.
One first period. He had wrestled like 2 minutes and 51 seconds. I did the math. I was like, he's wrestled three matches to get to the finals and hasn't even put together an entire first period. So he was on a tear. That it was his weekend for sure.
Definitely, and I mean, that's who we drew first round. So that was a tough one, but we bounced back. And like Coach mentioned earlier, that was a Midwest Classic rematch against de Blasio of Colorado School of Mines, and we lost a really tight one out there by a point in the blood rounds of Midwest. But then we come back here on the backside of the national championships and dominate. I mean, it was like you could see it spiraling in the first 2 minutes of the match. So it wasn't like he just caught him in a headlock or something. We were dominating that match and then stuck him at 220. I'm not sure what adjustments that he in his mind had
knew. All of them.
Yeah, he knew he wanted to make them, and he made them, and it was clear. And that's one of the things he does so well. Like, even if you look at the match he had with Brower in the finals of the region championships versus the first time we wrestled him in the duel, I mean, he closes a 7-3, I think, decision to a one-point decision, and you can look for him to continue to close gaps on some of those type
and my
guys.
Favorite thing about watching him wrestle and those adjustments that he makes is they're not – he doesn't just go out there and find a way to slow you down. Right. He doesn't try to find a way to make it close. He makes those adjustments and wrestles you better.
Yeah.
And he's a highly technical kid. We have him show technique in the room.
Yeah.
I mean, he's that level of both technique, skill, ability, as well as his mental acuity for the sport. And he's going to be a fun one, you know, next year when he's really putting it together at the right time.
Absolutely. And then he dropped the tight one to Kuster from Drury in the blood round, who I think everybody in the country knows you don't want to be under him. You don't want that guy on top of you with legs in. But we still got out, you know, and the guy has skates on the rest, you know, 50 seconds that last third period. But, you know, it's frustrating because we had the same exact referee who called that last 45 completely different in Zabrana's match at regionals. You know, I'm not exactly sure in his mind what was different in this situation when we were on the other side of it, but you would have liked to see some more calls there. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I guess you should put yourself in a better position. But, we dropped the tight one, 2-1 to Kuster, who went on to take what? Do you remember? I think I got it right here.
I'm not sure.
Let's see, 141.
But one thing I will say about that is
– fourth.
I appreciated – if you're going to make a bad decision, make a bad decision because you have – confidence in yourself, and like he was like, no, I'm gonna go down and get out.
Yeah.
And nearly did. I mean, it was like 105 riding time. It wasn't like a minute 45 or something. So, you know, as much as you hate it and as frustrating as it is, because I'm sitting there like this, he's like, I'm going to go down. I was like,
yeah, we're going to – me and him will agree to disagree on that, you know. And we'll have that conversation at our end of the year kind of thing. But, you know, I think what I think about it. But at the end of the day, point being, you know, that kid went on to take fourth in the country, and we're right there with him. And 41 is always stacked. I mean, you got Small, Donathan, you got Brower, Karyanis, another super region opponent from Super Region 2 that's in there, Tate. I mean, if you just look at the top eight, it's stacked. And if you wrestled it three different times, it'd probably shake out three different ways with the exception of Donathan.
Right.
So, but you know, shout out to Blatt for getting it done, and look to see him on the podium next year. At 149, our 2023 All American Devin Moore. Not enough to say. I mean, I don't have enough time to talk about all the good and the positives that have come from him this year.
Yeah, he's one we talked about last year, kind of being frustrating at times because you see him about to turn the corner and then he'd kind of start to and then slip back. This year it was just kind of full steam ahead all year. You know, he started. Just kind of picking up where he left off last year. I was worried it would be kind of a repeat, but he just, you know, he started on an upward trajectory and just kind of maintained that all season, and it showed at the end when he won the region title and got on the podium at the national tournament.
Yeah, and knocking off, I mean, and I should have done this before the episode, but if you think about his last maybe 10 matches, how many rematches do we have against guys that beat us early on that we beat? You know, right. If you think about Piccarilli, you know, if you think about, well, I guess we didn't get to see Wilson, but you think about Derek that he beat from Central Missouri, mm-hmm. which was another Midwest matchup, and we pretty much that score is a lot closer than it looked. I mean, we pretty much dominated that. And then to go out and win in the blood round, over a three-time All-American from St. Cloud, and almost major, and we beat him 10-4. We turned him a couple times. There was one point in that match where I was like, "Man, it's not looking so good." But you saw something click mentally, and he got up and he figured it out. So.
Yeah, and that's the same opponent that Isaiah wrestled a couple years ago in the national finals. So this is, you know, some scrub. This is a kid who's, you know, had a chance to be a four-time All-American for his school. Is wrestling, you know, a kid from the same school that beat him in the national finals. I mean, you got to think there's a little motivation there. Mm-hmm. And Devin went out there and handled business and beat him worse than Isaiah did.
Yeah.
So that was crazy.
That was crazy. And it's not who you want to see to get on the podium.
Oh, no.
You know, like, it's not who you want to pick, a three-time All-American, return to national finals. That's not who I want to see. But my other thought is that, yeah, maybe it worked out for the best for us, but the first match we had against Nick Young, I mean, we're a super region champ, and we got to wrestle the three seed right out of the gates. So I know there was a lot of complaining about just the way we kind of our approach to the brackets and stuff like that going into it. Some coaches want to go back to four regions. Some want to stay at six. Some want to open it up to top four gold, that kind of thing. But I definitely, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how we seed and maybe seeding the whole thing. What do you think?
I think there's infinite number of possibilities, and I think they're all better than what we're doing. We're only seeding top eight, and we're at a situation right now where you've got a very solid kid, Devin Moore, for instance, who's capable of beating three-time All-Americans, you know, so, like, he proved it. So, clearly, he shouldn't be an unseeded guy,
because
he's beaten guys who are seeded one, two, three, you know, whatever. I don't know where Bianchini was seeded, but had to be pretty high.
I can tell you. I got it right here.
And, you know, when things are going that way,
four,
and you get disrespected in the voting and all the other regions who see each other a little bit more and kind of disrespect the region because we're the Southeast and, you know, maybe wrestling's traditionally a little weaker here. I think that's an issue, but I think you could formula like we did before. Mm-hmm. It's just going to take a little bit more time and a little bit of creativity to get it done, but it's not going to be hard to do. Second option is a guaranteed seeding for every region champ.
Yeah.
Another thing is you just seed the whole thing. At least then, because Devin Moore, I think, what did we say? He was technically like the 11 seed.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would have seeded out, he had the next most votes of all the guys. He had the most votes of everybody who didn't get seeded. So he would have been ninth.
Correct.
So that puts him on the opposite side of the bracket, completely different path, you know, potentially changes how things go. And again, like you said, maybe it worked out the best as it was. But when you're a region champion, you don't want to be drawn –
The number three seed
first round, and I don't think you should have to draw that kid first round. So
because you've proven yourself.
Yeah,
at that
exactly.
Point.
So I think you know, if if those other kids wanted to be in our region or something, if you think our region's easy, well, then go to school in our region. But right. you want to go to school where you went to school, that's the price you pay. We should get the respect for being a region champion just like every other region. Now, if you want to seed us 7th or 8th, that's fine, but we should be seeded. Or at least if you seed the whole thing, again, you avoid a guy who should be 8th or 9th seed or, you know, 9th or 10th seed getting kind of screwed into the 15th or 16th seed. And I think that's really what ultimately the fuss was about.
Right. Agree. No, that's well said. And I hope we can make some adjustments because a lot of guys are getting screwed on that. So
yeah, if you want to vote, just vote them all. Just vote for all 16. Yeah. It ain't that hard.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my vote. So, but yeah, no, you know, shout out to, you know, bad draw, whatever draw you want to call it. Shout out to Devin Moore for still going out there and getting it done and helping us keep that streak going. Because it was narrow, but you know, so far since our program's inception, I mean, we've brought back an All-American every single year. So that's something we have a huge sense of pride about. And so to continue that going, you know, shout out to Devin Moore for doing that and look for him. He's coming back and he's still on a mission. You know, for next year, he's not happy and satisfied until he gets that national championship. So I'm really excited to have him back for grad school along with a lot of those other guys, and we're excited to have him on the next episode too. We're going to interview him and kind of just get his thoughts and takeaways from the year, the tournament, and his just outlook on the things he needs to do to continue improving moving forward.
Yeah, and I think it'll be last year we had Spears and Isaiah on like right after the national tournament, and I think Isaiah was still in a certain sense of shock from having been a national champ and then, you know, not really finishing the way he wanted to. He took 4th as a senior, and then Spears had having just gotten on the podium for the first time. I don't think he'd really sat in yet. I think it'll be nice to get Devin's perspective, having had a little time to decompress and also, you know, enjoy this, but put it aside and kind of get his mind turned toward next season. Cause he's already talking about, like you said, he's not done yet and he's full steam ahead already.
Yeah, absolutely. So congratulations to all those guys, and I'm pumped for next season. Next up, this is the point where we usually talk about what's next as far as competition-wise. But like I said, it's really just about rounding out that recruiting class of 2023. I think that can be said for all the college wrestling programs in the country, no matter what division you are, JUCO, blah, blah, blah. I think everybody's trying to nail down those last few hammers, and we're in that boat too. So you look for some exciting news for us here in the next month or two. But we're working hard on that front so that we can continue the tradition that we've established here. Moving on, just kind of want to jump into some other news for Newberry College Athletics. On April 3rd through the 5th, the women's golf are going to be competing at the SAC Championships out in Anderson, South Carolina. April 5th through the 9th, cheerleading is going to be at the College Nationals, as always, in Daytona Beach, Florida. And then 9th through the 11th of April, men's golf will also be at the SAC Championships, and that's in Lake Hickory, North Carolina. So go Wolves. We look forward to bringing back some hardware from those. And then, Coach, I'll let you jump into the general news for Newberry.
Yes, just some general housekeeping items from around the college. Founders Federal Credit Union is to open tomorrow for campus, so they will put a branch in Kauffman Hall that's going to have a soft opening tomorrow, but it will be for students, faculty, and staff. They'll allow you to apply for, you know, membership to the bank, credit card savings, all that kind of stuff, and you can do that online as well, but I can imagine it's going to be, you know, a lot going on in here as well. And also, they will do a seminar in the PE complex for like life budgeting, how to handle savings, managing your accounts, paying your bills, all that kind of stuff, which, you know, even though some of us faculty and staff probably could use a little bit of that, it's definitely going to be huge for the students. And that's something that I've heard so much discussion about.
Yeah.
So they're going to kind of open the branch here. I think they're going to have they've already have the ATMs on campus. And so they're the title
sponsor
for the new phase of the football stadium. Yep. So that'll be the Founders Federal Credit Union Fieldhouse or whatever they end up naming it. But just to see how much they're jumping into campus, I think it's huge.
Absolutely. And I sat in on that last financial literacy course they did. And like you said, I learned some things too. So, they're doing an awesome job. And it's a $2.5 million partnership that you always like to see the monetary side of a partnership. But just to see the actual literacy and the knowledge that they're bringing to our campus, to our students, and how engaged they are sitting into some of these sessions, I think that's just as valuable too. So, shout out to them for that. Next up, I want to jump into this interview we did with Kelly. Yeah. He was a 2008 All-American for us. One of the toughest dudes that I've ever seen wrestle to this day. And you'll just hear him talk and some of his insight and his mindset on what made him such a tough wrestler and such a competitive wrestler. It was just an awesome interview, one of my favorite ones. He's doing some great things right now. Not going to spoil too much, but right. Want to jump into it. So
yeah, Kelly's a fun dude. He was my roommate, and he's a very intense guy, and I hope – that comes through. There's some things he said that were like the most Kelly things I've ever heard. But I'm hoping that it shines through as well for people who don't really know him. But yeah, it was a fun interview, and he's a fun dude to be around.
Awesome. So here we go, Kelly Anderson, everyone.
Record on this. Cool. How we doing, man?
Doing good. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Got the Warhogs on your shirt. That's fitting.
Warhog. It's one of the kids in my kid classes. This is his fight shirt.
I like it.
Warthog.
Yeah. I like how
I let him pick between Warthog and Warthog, and he wanted Warthog.
I support it. It's kind of like the Hogwarts, but different.
You will find a Harry Potter reference anywhere.
So what's going on, guys?
Chilling, man. How you doing?
We're getting ready for this fight, and then I'm going to retire.
Be done. Nice. Going out on top? Going to knock him out in the first round?
Probably not. Probably going to take him down and beat him up.
I like it. That's very much your style.
Yeah.
When is the fight? What's going on with you guys?
Are we on the podcast right now, or is this?
Yeah, I just went ahead and hit record. So I just.
You guys like record it live, or is this? Okay, we're doing it.
Yeah. No, I mean it's not playing live.
Okay.
We'll put it into our. We'll record our like. Our interview kind of with each other, and we discuss everything, and we'll plug this in.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, when is the fight?
May 27th.
Okay, got it.
So, you got like 7-8 weeks left.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
How's the weight cut? Is it a big cut for you?
No, it's only like, I got like 15 pounds. That's nothing.
Nice.
Cool.
Blanton, how much are you weighing now?
Like 204, dude.
That's not bad.
No,
that's
not bad. I got gross though. I got up to like 230.
That's a big blend right there.
It is. It was pretty massive. But I mean, like cutting weight is nothing for you. I mean, you were like a pretty decent size heavyweight, and you cut down to 97. Like it was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it sucked a lot. It wasn't easy actually at all. It was actually extremely hard, and it was. Yeah, that's all. It was just really hard all the time to make 97. That was a big, it didn't help that we went to McDonald's. You know what? As an adult out of college and stuff, I wish the one thing that we all could have done as a team better was the nutrition part of it. Because, like, I mean, I remember we would all be cutting crazy amounts of weight, do a tournament all day long, and then we'd go get McDonald's afterwards. And, like, you cannot do that to your athletes. Like, after they just killed themselves, the first thing you're going to give them is a ham sandwich with mustard and then McDonald's. If I could go back in time and change one thing about how I took care of myself, I would have ate way better. And I would have made a stink about it, too, in the cafeteria. And I think if the kids were just given a little bit better food, we would have all performed a lot better.
Yeah. We try to do a better job with that now. The only thing that guys want to eat after a tournament now is Mexican. Like, they want to go to Chipotle or Moe's. So
that's beautiful. I wish that's the right option. You know,
it's better. I feel like it's better than McDonald's.
Yeah, just a little bit.
It's all like whole ingredients. You know what I mean? Unless
You're not eating questionable stuff. Like, and then plus two, like. When you're cutting weight and you're on a strict diet and you're doing all that stuff, and then after a tournament, you go and celebrate, and then you put on 20 pounds that night. Like, it's just me as an adult, me as learning diet and nutrition as I was doing fighting, that was one thing I wish I could have redid with wrestling.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. What's been going on since you left? I mean, your last semester or your last year, I guess, at Newberry, we were roommates, which was kind of a cool experience for me because it was like a guy who had been team captain and who had been an All-American and kind of showed me the way as I was like redshirting and then getting into the program as a first year starter. Then my second year we lived together. Like just having you, you know, kind of like having coach's eyes on me at all time kind of kept me a little more, I guess, grounded, so to speak. But, you know, I remember riding practice together, and I actually live pretty close to there now. So
is that building still like up?
It's standing. Yeah. But like,
I'll drive with my mind.
Yeah. When I'll drive the kids to school or whatever, we'll hit those bumps that used to be down there on Johnstone Street. And it's, I still think about it the first time you're like, hey, you know where the fun bumps are? I'm like, what are you talking about? You're like, voodoo. And, you know, just little things like that. But, you know, since you graduated, tell us a little bit about, like, your, you know, adult life. I know you're on the Ultimate Fighter. You've been in Bellator. You've been doing all kind of crazy stuff. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so after Newberry, I moved down to South Florida, and I lived in the Miami area for about 8 years. I was a wrestling coach at American Top Team. So, basically, after school, I started doing jiu-jitsu competitions, and I started doing fighting, and then I beat some really good guys in the jiu-jitsu world, and that got attention of the American Top Team coaches, and then they brought me down for fight camps, and then they were eventually just like, you want to move down here, teach wrestling and fight, and that was kind of where I wanted to do anyways. I mean, my whole last year of wrestling – I was wrestling because I loved wrestling, but I really wanted to be doing MMA the whole time. I wish, you know, I could have done both at that time. But so, yeah, after that, I moved down there. I fought a bunch, did the whole, like, Ultimate Fighter thing, fought in a couple of different shows, got to travel all over the world doing it. You know,
you won a couple world titles, didn't you?
Yeah, so Fila at the time. It's like World United Wrestling now, but they put on a world championships for jiu-jitsu, and they did it for like 6 years straight. Fila was trying to get more into the jiu-jitsu world, so they put on a world championships. They put on qualifiers in every country. It was like a legit world championship where you had a representative from every country, and it was a huge tournament, and I won double gold. So in jiu-jitsu, they do also this thing called absolute division. In wrestling, it's heavyweight, but in jiu-jitsu, they do an absolute division where you can have a guy that's 130 pounds go up against a guy who's 300 pounds. There's no weight limit. So that's like the absolute champion of the tournament. So I won my weight division, and then I won the absolute division, and did that in 1 year. And then I competed in Serbia again the next year and got silver. And at that time, that's when fighting was really starting to take off for me, and being able to go and be more like making money with fighting. So I kind of quit doing the jiu-jitsu stuff and just focused purely on MMA. So that's what I did after school. And then after I was done fighting, I got my last fight afterwards. I was getting ready for another fight, and I got hit by a car. And I had to get like 2 knee surgeries, and my shoulder was really messed up for a long time. So that's what kind of took me out of fighting. Because it took me almost 2 years to get my knee back to where I needed it to be able to even exercise. So I was a little bit older getting into fighting anyways. I had graduated from school. I was like 26 at that time. So I didn't have a long window like guys who are like 18, 19 getting into the sport. So I chose to just not try and go back to that grind because I was tired of the grind, just because I had done wrestling. And you guys know back in the beginning of Newberry Wrestling, it was hard. It was crazy hard. And it took a lot. Like, that was the prime years of my life. And that takes a lot off of your athletic career when you grind like that. So
yeah, we used to joke that it ages you in dog years.
Yeah, man, like these guys nowadays have, I'm sure you guys don't do the same. I mean, probably a little bit, but probably completely different than what we had to go through. And at that time, too, we didn't have so many people that were so concerned all the time. And we didn't have people that were, you know, making sure that we were, you know, they just kind of let coach do whatever he wanted. But it also made us beasts, and it made us really mentally tough, but it also aged us in dog years. So.
So you got hit by a car?
Yeah, man. I was living in Florida, and I had just had my last fight in Bellator, my Bellator contract. I was in talks with the UFC, and
And all I had to do was win one fight. So I had my fight set up and I was training and I was driving back from the gym. And I only lived like a couple miles from the gym in Florida. So I had got a scooter, like a little moped scooter. And I was riding that back and forth to practice. And this guy didn't see me and just ran me over. And I had to get two knee surgeries. They wanted to do a shoulder surgery. But after my second knee surgery, I was like, I'm going to just let it do its thing. Because at that time, I kind of figured I was going to be done with fighting because I was just, my knee was so messed up. I think I tore the ACL, MCL, LCL. I basically tore everything in my knee because before I got that wreck, I had just had another knee surgery too. So after the wreck, I had a total of three knee surgeries in the span of a year. So it just wasn't working out for me athletically at that time. So I decided to start coaching and do a gym and maybe help some wrestlers out and stuff like that. And that's pretty much what I've been doing ever since then. And now I'm in a space where I have my business going and it's good. And I can actually step back a little bit and train myself and take a fight. And this will be my last one. And then I'm going to just get fat probably.
Nice.
Yeah.
And where are you right now?
So I live in High Point, North Carolina now. Me and my wife opened a gym up here about a year and a half ago. Okay. So we were living in Reno, Nevada, but I just miss the South. I like the South a lot. I like the weather out here. I like just a different vibe than the West Coast. So I wanted to come back, and we had an opportunity to open up a gym out here, and that's what we did. So now I have a gym in High Point, North Carolina.
Give us a little tour, dude.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is the main mat area. I don't know how to do this because this is probably my second Zoom call ever.
That's crazy.
But this is the main mat area. We have a big weightlifting area in the back. We got a little front lobby right here. We have the desk and all of our pictures and belts and trophies and stuff like that.
Nice. And this is all your space?
Yeah, this is all my building. This is all the food that we sell, Long Life Meal Prep. I'm really big on eating good now and taking care of myself. So that's, you know, kind of what we do in here is we do MMA, we do jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, wrestling, and then I try and help people with like fitness and nutrition and getting their body fat down and stuff like that.
Yeah, man. Well, I got
what's it called? What's your business called?
Battleborn BJJ and MMA.
Nice. So anybody in the High Point area, go see Kelly.
Definitely. You're in High Point. Come on down.
Yeah, man. Definitely. I got to get down there and check it out because I don't think High Point's too far from here, right?
It's like 2.5 hours.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah. So the my fight's actually going to be in Columbia. So I would love to have you guys out there.
Yeah, definitely. Circle the calendar.
I've been wanting to come down and train at the with you guys down there and just kind of wrestle with some of the younger guys and stuff, and I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you obviously are welcome anytime, man. We got this 97 pounder who it would be very fun to see you beat up on him.
You know, I'm old now though, so I'll probably get gas out or something. I don't know.
I've seen your gas tank. And I've never seen you gas out.
Never. Well, yeah, I just cover it up well.
Nice. Yeah. Well, just, I know we kind of touched on it before, but just to kind of give everybody else like a little more background. So like Kelly was the original, I guess, heavyweight kind of in Newbury's program, and had qualified at heavyweight. And then Cy had been in the program and was behind Kelly for a year. And then over the course of Kelly pushing Cy, Cy getting a little better, and then Kelly realizing we had a hole below him in the lineup. That's when I mentioned earlier you had cut down. So, like, that's when Kelly cut down to 97 and then went in All-American in 97 and was one of the first couple All-Americans in program history. I guess Quinn had done it a year or two before. But outside of that, one of the first All-Americans in program history and was, like I said earlier, you know, one of the leaders on the team when I came into the program. So, you know, one of the first guys I got to look up to and really just did everything right. And I can remember days running sprints where, like by the end of run of sprints, like you couldn't stand and like everybody else is just kind of getting through it. And you're like, nah, I'm going to push myself. And just, you know, really setting the bar high. And so, yeah, I just want to make sure everybody understood, like, we call it the Pack Leader Podcast, and we like to talk about leaders both in the program and then in the real world. And you've certainly done both. But I really wanted people who maybe are only more familiar with the recent history of the program to really understand, like, you kind of were one of those trailblazers early on.
Yeah. I had already wrestled 2 years in college when I had come to Newberry, and I had already All-American in the JUCOs. And I actually wasn't even going to wrestle after that. I was planning on just working and getting a job doing construction, which I'm really glad I didn't. Yeah, actually, Kelly Rovells was a big part of the reason why I got out to Newberry, because he was, oddly enough, he was actually the basketball coach at the junior college that I was at when I was at the junior college. So he knew I was there, and he knew that I wasn't really wrestling, but I had placed fourth in the country the year before my freshman year in college. And I didn't even wrestle my sophomore year. I redshirted, and I was just going to do that. And then he hit me up, and he got me in touch with Valak, and then Valak kind of took it from there and got me in at Newberry. But, you know, I'm a big believer in, like, destiny and how things are supposed to work out. And I feel like if I would have never went to Newberry, I would have probably never would have fought. I probably would have never did all this other stuff that I did in my life. And why I feel like I was kind of successful in that stuff was because of the work ethic that I learned at Newberry, you know, being away from your parents. And we all kind of at that time had this mentality, because it was a new program, that we had the opportunity to make it however we wanted to make it. If we wanted to make it a room full of scrubs, that's on us. If we want to make it a tough room where we're going to be respected, that was also on us. And Quinn had the same mentality, because Quinn also wrestled at the same junior college as I did. And our junior college, we were a national runner-up, national champion, team champion. So me and him kind of came from a program where we already knew what it took to be a good team. And we just had to all be dogs and be tough and just, you know, work hard and show everybody else how to do it. And, you know, me, Quinn, and Valak had lots of meetings before even that first season happened, where we wanted to make it, you know, I think Valak said we wanted to make it Iowa, and me and Quinn wanted to make it this and that. And we kind of found a happy meeting where it was like our own dirty South style that was tough, you know. And I think that Newberry has kind of kept that through the years. You know, when people wrestle Newberry, they know that they're going to be in for a match no matter what. So, you know, that makes me proud too, that we were such a small school in middle of nowhere, really. And we were able to make something out of that program, you know, and it's lasted too. It wasn't just like one generation of kids. It's been now, I don't know, like 10 generations of kids that went through Newberry now, and all of them have been good, like pretty much every year since the beginning of the school. So that makes me proud.
Definitely, man. And you mentioned Lassen Community College, where you went. For people that don't know, just talk about the dogs that came through there, man. I mean,
Jamil Kelly, Shelton Benjamin, Kelly Ravels, Anthony Johnson, who just passed away, that was in the UFC. He was in there the same years as me. Guy named Charles Lloyd, who was also a national. Vladimir Montushenko, a bunch of Russian dudes that I can't even pronounce their name that were national champions that went, you know, because our coach had that Russian connection. So he'd bring in a bunch of Russians. Brock Lesnar was there. Like, a bunch of people were at Lassen at that time. He was also like a master recruiter. You know, he found ways to bring in these guys that were like Russian freestyle national champions. And then next thing you know, they're wrestling at a little junior college in California and beating D1 All-Americans, you know. So that's where we kind of, I don't know, I just learned a different style. Russians have a different style of wrestling too. I wasn't a very conventional style of wrestler. I like that Russian style of wrestling, and we learned that a lot at Lassen. So, you know, that's where we were at.
That's awesome, man.
I remember one of my favorite stories is from when we dueled Pembroke at Carson Newman, and you were wrestling, I think it was Derek Brunson, and he was kind of a big move guy, and ended up, he had a couple slick big moves and ended up with a pretty big lead, and you just never stopped. And I think he might even still end up winning by like a point, but the final score.
He beat me by a point. Yeah, I came back like 13 points, and I had him broke. Like,
He wasn't even standing at the end of the match, but
no, he literally, like, I think, like, the it started off like 10-1, and then all of a sudden it's like 16-15 final or something, and he crawled off the mat and he crawled toward Valak and was like, I never want to wrestle that dude again. And I remember him saying that, like you broke him so bad that he admitted it.
Yeah, no, I actually, that was one of my most memorable college wrestling matches. It's not even the ones that I won. It's that one that I lost that I was so close to beating him. And I knew I had broke his spirit, and I knew I had beat him mentally. If I just had like 30 more seconds, I would have got him. But how it goes.
Hey, so talk about, because one thing that was super evident coming, you know, I didn't wrestle with you because I was a little bit, you know, before you were on the team. But I remember coming here as a high school senior, and it was just super evident that you had that mindset and that mentality that, like you said, like I just 30 more seconds, like I would have broken. I had him. Like, just talk about how athletes today can find that place mentally, because I think at the end of the day, you know, technique is technique, but that's really the name of the game in college wrestling and what separates good from mediocre, from great, you know?
I think that, you know, honestly, man, like that's a championship mentality, and champions don't have a lot of friends, you know? Like, I can go back and I think about college and I think, like, I was the man on a mission and I didn't care about anything else other than winning. And whether that was breaking my partners in practice, because that was how I was going to get that work, is I knew if at the end of practice, if my partner was so tired and broken that he couldn't even stand up, do a stand up, that I got good work that day. If I could break somebody's spirit every day in practice, then I could do it in a match. And, you know, I look back and I wish maybe I would have maintained better relationships with people, and maybe I wasn't such a, you know, in the room, but you have to be in wrestling. You have to be that guy. And I just lived, I wanted to be that guy. And so you have to be a champion in wrestling, you have to actually love wrestling. You have to love practice. You have to love grinding for 3 hours straight. If you don't love that, if you don't love breaking a guy's spirit and making him quit, then you're never going to be a champion. It takes more than just learning the moves to become really good at wrestling. It's also a mentality. It's also a tenacity that you can only get through grinding. And, you know, I was never the slick guy. I was never the technical, super technical guy. I was the guy that was going to pull on your head until you get in such bad position that a eighth grader could double leg you, you know? So that's my mentality. And it carries over into life, and it carries over into fighting. Fighting was a big mental thing. Like, a little bit even more than wrestling is, like, it's that Spartan mentality where you're going to live by the sword and die by the sword. You know, there's times when I was cutting weight where I was like, you know what, this is worth it. Like, if I die because I'm cutting weight, like, I was a warrior when I did it. And that's the mentality you got to have. And I wish I wasn't such a jerk to people in practice sometimes, but then I also had to do it. I had to do it in order to put myself where I wanted to be. And for some guys who maybe don't have championship mindset, it makes them want to quit. And the guys who want to quit wrestling because it's too hard probably should quit, because it is too hard for them, you know, because it's a hard sport. If it was easy, everybody would do it.
I
can honestly say you're one of the most willing to go into deep waters people I've ever watched.
Well, yeah, you have. Some guys know where their strong points are. I knew that the first 30 seconds of a match, if I try and go out there and do like a super duck or something that is considered outside of the realm of basic, I was probably going to lose that match. If I went out there and like got good position and just like wore on your neck for like the first 3 minutes, once you're like broke from that, then I'm going to be able to hit all my shots and not struggle to get them. But if I'm, you know, shooting a sweep single in the first match, it's going to be a scramble in the beginning. And then I'm not going to be able to regulate my energy, and then I'm going to be behind in the match, right? So I would rather just initiate my whatever, I don't know how to explain it, like imposed my will on the person. That was my whole thing, was I just gonna get you tired and then make you want to quit. Well, there's another good example of that. I don't know if you remember this match, Blanton, but Trey Moss was wrestling for Limestone, and he was an All-American the year before. And I didn't do anything in the match except for just push forward and pull on his neck, and he wound up getting, like, disqualified for stalling.
Yes, like, I remember you stalling him out.
There's more to wrestling than hitting the moves. Like, there's match strategy, too. Like, if you know your strengths and weaknesses, like, don't – take a shot on a guy that's going to stuff you and leg cradle you or whatever it is. Like, just play the game. The game sometimes is not the prettiest match. It's the most strategic match. So, like, I was just faking like I was going to try and take him down. I wasn't actually going to take a shot. And I was just getting those stall calls. And, yeah, so.
I love it. Yeah. On the other side of things, now that you're coaching, because you do youth level too, right?
I really don't have much to do with wrestling anymore. Like, normally what I like to do is I'll find like one or two kids in the area who like to wrestle, and I'll help those two, three kids out. I'm not a big fan of politics of wrestling in high school level and parents and toxic relationships with parents and stuff like that. I would much rather just teach doing jiu-jitsu and kickboxing and MMA, and then just help out like two or three kids. Yep. For wrestling, instead of trying to have 50 kids in the room, I'd rather have three heavyweights that I can actually wrestle with too, and make those guys better. So the wrestling world, like, I miss wrestling, I love wrestling, but the parents of wrestling make it so unbearable that it makes me not even want to be a part of wrestling anymore. As far as like in high school level wrestling, club level wrestling, cool, like helping a kid one-on-one, I'm good with it. Running a team and having to deal with parents and administration and stuff like that with schools, I'm good on that now.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask, are there certain challenges or certain ways in which you find the coaching aspect to be more challenging than it was to compete?
Well, I just look at everything like it's wrestling. So, like, even when I'm teaching a jiu-jitsu class and we're talking about technical things in jiu-jitsu, I still refer to it as wrestling. Like, to me, it's all wrestling. Wrestling, boxing to me is wrestling, which punches.
Right.
So all my jiu-jitsu students, all my MMA guys, they're like, if you look at them on paper, you're like, oh, that guy's a wrestler, but half of them never wrestled before. But we do so much drilling, like wrestling drilling, that they all can have that same wrestling pressure.
Right.
You know, that's what wrestlers bring to MMA, is like control and pressure. And you can't teach that in jiu-jitsu. You need wrestlers that have been doing wrestling their whole lives to come in and then learn jiu-jitsu. It makes them way better. I just relate everything back to wrestling.
No, that's awesome, man.
That's the most Kelly thing I've ever heard. You're like, boxing is just wrestling with punches. Jiu-jitsu is just wrestling with chokeholds.
Yeah, that's all
it's all wrestling.
It's wrestling, man.
I like it. Shifting gears here, you're married to Wendy. Talk a little bit about how y'all met and just like future plans. I know you're coming up on your last fight, and you know, maybe what y'all want to get into here in the future. Yeah, sounds like you got a pretty good thing going there now.
Yeah, so Wendy and I got married last year or 2 years ago. We've been living out here about a year and a half. She was a bodybuilder before she got into MMA and jiu-jitsu, and she was already kind of a good athlete before that, but then she started like coming into the gym, and then we just hit it off from the very beginning, and that's how that worked out. But now that she's been training for a while and she's becoming more active, her career is about to take off right now, so mine's ending, and then it'll allow me to just kind of focus on my gym and then focus on her and getting her to the UFC and making those strides. She's had, you know, she's been fighting now for training for 3 years. She's had like 12 fights already. That's unheard of for most people to fight, you know, 4 or 5 times in a year. So we're kind of fast tracking it. She's already has eyes on her from big promotions and stuff. We just got to continue executing what we've been doing and continue fighting and staying busy and improving. And then I totally see Wendy making it in the UFC and being a star there.
That's exciting. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
And everybody asked her if she's a wrestler too, but she never wrestled. But and she fights exactly how I do. You know, I showed her everything that I know. So she's, you know, taking people down and beating them up.
Nice. I like it, man. Well, give me that date one more time. You said May for your fight in Colombia.
May 27th. I think it's going to be at the Jamil Shrine Temple. Okay. It's Conflict MMA Promotions. You know, that promotion company actually is the first company I ever fought on. I was actually the first sanctioned MMA fight in South Carolina history. So it actually means a lot to me to actually end my career and start my career in Colombia around the people that helped me out from the very beginning. And yeah, so I'm just really excited for that.
Nice, man. Well, I'm going to do everything I can to be there. I know Blanton will too, dude. I'm excited to see you get after it for that last time.
Yep, me too, man.
You gotta bring us some t-shirts to wear.
Definitely.
We'll do what shirts?
Some t-shirts.
We're doing some Adidas tracksuits.
Oh, sweet.
Yep. So if you want to get in on that, send me a DM. I'll get you on.
We'll slide in.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, man. Before I let you go, what advice would you like to leave guys on the team right now? I mean, you kind of really have already summed it up just pretty organically.
Man, the biggest thing is just leaving it in on the mat every day when you go into practice. Like, you know, at the end of practice, if you gave it 100% or if you dogged it a little bit and you held back, when you hold back in the room, you're only holding yourself. Well, you're actually holding everybody back. You're holding your teammates back. You're holding yourself back. Stop doing that. Don't be afraid to get tired. Like, these guys want to save it to the end of practice. And no, just like start learning how to like let that energy go the whole time. And then you won't be so scared of getting tired in matches and stuff like that, and not letting your offense go because you're just questioning your ability. You got to go out there every single day, give it 100%. So when you finally get to your matches, you're not scared to take your shots in the first period because you're scared of getting tired in the third period, or you're scared you can't get up off a bottom. That, you know, that's like ridiculous. If you're scared to wrestle the first round because you can't get up off the bottom, like, you better just start working way harder because you're not going to make it.
Right.
You can't get off the bottom, game over.
I agree. Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, man. It's been awesome having you on here. It's been one of my favorite interviews. I thought it's been awesome to catch up and hear about everything you've been doing post college. And we're definitely always proud to call you, you know, one of an alumni of Newberry, and we'll be following and keeping in touch and see you in Columbia.
Awesome. We'll be in touch soon.
Okay.
Awesome, dude. You're catching up, man.
Yep. Have a good night, guys.
You too. Thank
you. All right, Coach, what'd you think?
A lot of fun catching up with Kelly. And like I said, he's an intense guy, and just the way he says some things, it kind of makes you laugh, especially if you know him.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know exactly where his mind's at when he says it.
Right, but he's trying to keep it, you know, on the show.
Right.
Wants to keep it PC. But no, shout out to him, and thank you for joining us, Kelly. And good luck on your fight. He's going to be in Columbia, South Carolina, which is right in my backyard here on May 27th, and I plan on being there to see him. That's going to be his last fight, like he mentioned, and look forward to seeing him going out with a win. I know he's in a pretty good training situation where he's at, and his wife is doing some awesome things on the MMA side of competitive as well, so I'm pumped to see him.
I'm pumped for our tracksuits.
Oh, that too. We are gonna get some good. Don't forget our tracksuits, man. So, but no, thanks to everybody for listening. Make sure if you don't follow us on social media that you catch up with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and yeah, just engage with us. Like Coach always kind of wraps up and says, if there's things that we can do to make this better for you, please, you know, give that feedback. We always want to try to do a better job of making sure that we're keeping you engaged, but doing so in a way that is fun and that's meaningful for you guys as supporters of our program. And I'd be remiss if I did not say shout out to TJ. Congratulations on the job. He's been helping us put this podcast together. Give him a hand. He's got a job. You want to tell us where? University of North Alabama. So he's finishing up his position with us here, leaving us unfortunately on April 15th, but super pumped to see him go on to bigger and better and to continue to excel in his career. So congrats, TJ. I appreciate the help, man. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.